my name is Dave Hanrady, and there will be no encore. Welcome to episode 83 of the No Encore Music Podcast. I've had a pint. Cullum O'Regan beside me has had 4 pints.
Don't judge the show. Me.
You can't tell.
Craig.
He's in great form. Craig, I'm straight from college. I'm professional.
But you didn't. You had your drinking already.
Yeah,
this
my
week.
Class are actually currently at Dicey's, I believe.
Stop
so.
Fucking.
Of course
I am
they
not,
are.
Though, so you can't give out to me.
Bleep that out. Legitimately, please bleep that out. So, Cullum, what went into the decision to come to the podcast sozzled?
Hosting a guest from Norway for the day.
You have to really.
Who wasn't drinking, apparently.
I think he was.
Was he?
Possibly.
A little bit.
Okay.
Well, yeah. Okay, well, I've had one, so I'll try and be the voice of reason. Craig, you presumably you don't rock a hip flask to college,
don't,
do you?
No, not yet. Maybe semester two.
Week.
Fair enough. Okay, let's get going. We have a lot to talk about before we even get to the news. I'd like to start the show with I'm going to stand up tall on Correction Corner.
Oh, good for Dave's you. Issuing a redaction.
I made a mistake. I think I made it a couple of times now. I've noted that Wolf Parade, a band that we talked about on the last show, reviewed the new record Cry Cry Cry, and we thought it was very good indeed. They're playing a gig in Dublin, but I got the date wrong. Oh. I kept saying it's on October the 20th. Turns out it isn't.
Got the month wrong.
Got the entire month wrong. They're playing on November the 20th, which means it's good news because Cullum gets to see them now.
Yeah.
Because Cullum won't be here next week.
I won't.
He'll be sunning himself. In the Mediterranean.
On his holidays, right? I think he's already on his holidays a bit.
Atlanta, to be fair, yeah, Lisbon. Yeah.
It's like Watford at the end of the season. Like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, he's phoning it.
So the good news, though, is that on October the 20th, Wolf Parade aren't playing, but it means that we get to go and see Elaine May, fresh from No Encore Live 2. Elaine May is headlining the Workman's Club on Friday, October the 20th, and I'm very much looking forward to catching her.
She was not so from, good.
Yeah, not from the side of the stage this time.
She
was excellent from our vantage point, and I know she went down a massive hit with the crowd that turned up to our live show. Thank you again for coming to our live show, and I'm looking forward to seeing her rock the Workman's. But she's not the only person who's going to rock the Workman's Club before the year is out. Am I right, guys?
That's right, we're going home, baby.
We're going home.
Yeah.
We're going home.
It's not No Encore Live 3, though. What is it?
It is the No Encore Quiz of the Year.
Okay,
Dave is so hyped. Am I right in thinking you're more hyped about this than the live shows?
I am so hyped
for
this.
You're a big quiz guy.
I've hosted 3 quizzes in the last 10 months, I suppose, with you guys.
Not even.
Craig missed a couple of them.
I did, unfortunately. The one I attended was amazing, though.
Cullum was there for all 3 of them.
Of course.
So how would you rate me as a quiz master, Cullum?
Pretty damn good, yeah.
Thanks very much. I put a lot of work into it. And we're going to put a lot of work into this. This is the No Encore Quiz of the Year. You can get your tickets now at, what is it again?
NoEncoreQuiz.eventbrite.ie.
That's NoEncoreQuiz.eventbrite.ie. It's Thursday, December the 7th. In the Workman's Club at about 7 or half 7.
Half 7.
So what this means is there'll be prizes. It's not just us having a jolly. Tickets are €10 per head, €35 a table, maximum 4 people a table. And you get to hang out with us and we get to shout questions at you
so lucky.
For about, you know, 2 or 3 hours or
How
whatever.
How do you feel about sharing your quizmaster duties? Do you think you'll be able to like relinquish a bit
of
control?
This is the thing. This was Cullum's idea. So yeah. I have to give credit where credit is due. Not only was this Cullum's idea, but Cullum has come up with some very, very innovative ideas for the quiz. We're going multimedia on this.
He's always pushing the envelope.
Oh, it's going to be wild. It's going to be wild.
Okay, so if someone's like, I like the live show. I don't know how I feel about a quiz. Like, what are you guys going to be talking about? It's a pop culture smackdown. Essentially.
Yeah.
And we'll be focusing a lot on music because we're a music podcast. So there's a bit of a music question quota in there. But we'll also there'll be questions. It's all about 2017. All questions about this year. So, you know, some still to be written, of course. And we'll be looking at a little bit of sport, a little bit of television, a little bit of film, but mostly music, I would say. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the questions will be fun to figure out. We are hard at work at making them as interactive and innovative as possible.
You've vetoed my Pete Doherty poetry round, unfortunately.
Do you want to try and explain that now? Because I didn't understand what you were talking about in the group chat, so.
No, neither did I, really.
One more time.
It was just a joke.
One more time. December the 7th, Thursday, Workman's Club, noencorequiz.eventbrite.ie, €10 per head. 35 a table. What I would say is limited space, so tickets are going to sell. So, you know, we hope it's a full house. I think it will be. It's going to be a really fun night. I actually, if you thought I was nervous at No Encore Live 2, forget about it, man. I adore quizzing.
Yeah,
it's great.
Be in this element.
I'm going to come into my own.
While we're plugging our live appearances, Galway, of course, on November the 4th at the end of the National Student Radio Conference, we will be in NUIG if you want to pop along.
Cullen will not be drinking Four Pints before we take the stage at half you say four that. In you the afternoon that. Or whatever it is. It's an afternoon show, mate. You got to be a little bit professional.
I don't know what else there is to do in Galway.
Still
mate.
The daytime.
Hey, listen, way, yeah, at least he there. Showed up. That's all I can say.
He did show up. So that's Galway, yes, 4th of November. Lots happening, man. Craig, how's college?
College is actually terrifying because we're being piled on with projects and stuff. And I'm like, what have I done? But quite good. Thank you for asking.
If you're listening, lecturers, give the man a break.
Yes, thank you. Cut me some slack.
There's only so much ways he can go. Now, before we get to the news, I went to a gig.
Oh, tell us more, dude.
I went to the sold-out night 2 of Dermot Kennedy in the Button Factory.
It feels like a venue we won't be playing, you know, probably again or for much longer.
Craig's right. As a matter of fact, he's announced the Olympia for January as part of a fresh tour. For anyone who hasn't heard of this name, you're going to, because he's fucking blown up. Irish singer-songwriter. Hasten to use the word troubadour, because apparently that's a word that should be on the way out, or at least reserved only for Fionn Regan or Bon Iver.
Sure.
So, he kind of trades in that kind of style, though, and he's a bit of a big deal. He's signed a deal to some UK and American outlets. Zane Lowe featured him on a show. Taylor Swift put him on a playlist.
Yeah,
he's millions of plays on Spotify. And I was in a room full of adoring fans. Now, I want to say that on night one, which was the night of the Ireland-Wales game, Kev Lefty of Red Enemy fame.
And Leakslip fame, more importantly.
Shout out to Leakslip.
Hometown. Do represent.
Do you want to say it?
The Big Lip.
Hiller.
Scum. Yeah.
Okay.
We did it.
So, yeah, Kev, who was guest on the show before, he was present for Dermot Show on the Monday, and he messaged me saying, it's got a terrible crowd, people are talking, people are doing Jaeger bombs, it's just, you know, cauldron of noise, as the Button Factory can be, and I've experienced it myself. But when I went there on the Tuesday, thankfully, it was a much more gracious crowd.
Do you think that was down to you?
I'd say so.
I think it was down to him rocking a backwards cap.
Oh,
for the entire gig,
bro.
If you can pull that look off, fair play to you, because I can't.
Well, I assumed it was coming off after one song. Nope. You know, he carried it off. But cool. No, I really enjoyed the show. I think he's got something about him, and I'd say watch this space.
Yeah, interesting.
Also, he kind of burned through the hits 3 songs in. Well, I say the hits, like his new single and the 2 songs that I knew going in.
Right.
But he managed to keep my attention for about an hour. So there you go.
It's a good sign.
It's an extraordinary rise for the guy, because I first came across him when he was literally invited up by Glenn Hansard to play a song at a gig in Vicar Street when Glenn Hansard himself had never heard Dermot Kennedy play before. Dermot Kennedy had barely had a gig.
Hang on, it almost sounds like Glenn Hansard gigs are like freewheeling, wild, out of control, and no structure to them whatsoever.
You know,
well,
used
you
to
know
busk.
What? That is absolutely
really?
Yeah.
It's absolutely true, but I guess it's proof, you know, stop clock tells the right time twice a day. when he invited Dermot Kennedy up there, he really impressed. He just knew him from busking on Christmas Eve.
Okay.
And therefore got him up on the Vicar Street stage. Turned out the bloke could you know, make his way around the tune. And
refreshing
then,
that it's not Glenn Hansard just impromptu getting up onto a stage.
Didn't he? You know what I mean? Didn't he ramble for 4 hours?
Oh,
didn't he ramble?
What?
Did you see his album cover for his new album?
Yes.
Oh, it's so good. He looks like a Dickensian chimney sweep.
What the fuck?
How did he sign off on that? Like, I don't know.
How did he ramble? Okay. Let's get to the news. Sure. Like we said, quizzes, gigs, all kinds of stuff happening. So do remember that. In the news, I guess we should probably start with not clarification corner, but we talked about Anthony Fantano of the Needle Drop on the last episode. Now, Craig had been kind of saying, I think that this hit piece in the fader, as some have called it, might be a little bit kind of 2 + 2 = 5.
Yeah.
Anthony Fantano has responded to the claims that he is in fact a secret alt-right champion with a 22-minute video on YouTube, which I think we've all watched.
Yeah.
And Craig will now attempt to summarise.
Well, it's very comprehensive how he kind of dismisses the arguments that are brought up in the fader piece. And it really does seem like a lot of very tenuous connections were being made. And like, it does come down to, I think, what we were saying, where a lot of what he was doing on that channel was kind of probably ham-fisted satire, but certainly just a kind of, you know, him discussing meme culture, and it wasn't really meant to be that serious. And he also addresses things of just like, well, actually, do you know what? Like, I was just throwing stuff up on it. It wasn't really getting that many views. I wasn't making that much money off it. It was a pretty comprehensive kind of dismissal of this article. And I mean, we've talked about how we're massive fans of the guy, but I have to say, kind of like, he did it in a very kind of calm, collected way. And I believed him. I was just like, yeah, this wasn't a well written, well researched article.
I feel like I should just reiterate there, not massive fans of the guy.
No.
I'm not sure that came quite out there. We're massive fans. We're not massive fans of Needle Drop. I found him quite obnoxious. Cullen, what do you think?
I mean, again, it goes back to the argument that I was making last week about incompetence. I think, like, even in his defense, he hesitates when he's describing some of the videos as funny. And, yeah, you know, like, they're just not funny. It doesn't mean that he had, like, massive amounts of offense. He very clearly didn't. But even he sort of recognizes that there was a failure at some level in what he was trying to do with some of those. I mean, like, there's bits of it that I don't absolutely buy. I don't buy the thing of, like, you know, it's nothing to do with the rapper, it's about the fans. And frankly, if that's true, then that's somewhat objectionable in my eyes as well. Because yeah. I don't like anybody ever taking aim at the fans rather than the artists themselves. But at the end of the day, I mean, like, it was just clearly taken so far out of context. But he has to recognise that's going to happen. I mean, he's so, you know, entrenched in internet culture.
And he owned it when he was like, oh, the one thing this article correctly did was call me the biggest music journalist in the world. So he, like, he didn't even shy away from that. He, like, he used it as a kind of a cocky point of view.
Yeah, but at the same time, when he's talking about, like, you know, oh, such and such was taken out of context, and you're just like, yeah, but mate, like, you're the one who's just talked about packing memes, like, 10 to the minute into yeah. your videos.
The one thing I would say,
you
though,
know how this is going to be taken out of context and dragged towards whatever political agenda someone has. The one thing I would say that does look good
in his favour is that, like, the article had been edited about 3 or 4 times after the fact.
Yes,
yeah, toned down quite a bit from the initial things that I had actually read myself. And that does not look good, and does also speak to the current culture where it's the rush to be first. Although it did sound like this person was working on this feature for quite a while, ultimately it's a case of, like, due diligence, and, you know, it speaks to modern day, like, I don't, like, the piece itself is a takedown. Like, I mean, like, it's designed
it's
to take
poor
down.
Journalism.
Yeah, but there's good journalism in there as well, I think. I mean, like, it
do
just
you
seems
think
like
so?
I think they botched their own. Yeah, they kind of missed their own open goal here, really, and they actually managed to give him more ammunition. I don't think he's
I think they set out to vilify him and then just used whatever means possible, even
for
if they
sure.
were half troops.
And I don't
or,
think
you know.
That Anthony Fantano is, like, a racist.
No,
or
neither
a
do
fucking
I.
Whatever. But I, like, you know, I think it's just that he's a bit of a dick. And but ultimately, yeah,
that's not a crime.
But I think pieces like this need to be ironclad, and this one wasn't. And yeah. he managed to use that to his kind of advantage, I suppose. But then again, I know, Colm, you're saying, like, you don't want to blame the fans. At the risk of, you know, getting swatted by Fantano's crew, his fans are kind of not great.
Oh, no, but, like, he was never talking about his fans. He was having a go at, like, you know, the fans.
The artists,
like,
but that's
fans,
what I'm
yeah.
saying.
Precisely,
no, no,
but
that's
yeah.
what I'm saying is Fantano plays to a gallery now. For example, it's like Kermode and Mayo, the film podcast. I used to listen to that years ago, and I loved Mark Kermode as a film critic, and I like reading his writing now, but I can't stand that show, because along the way, that show became this bloated mess.
It's very self-congratulatory.
In which film,
you know,
reviews take up about 10% yeah. of it, and the rest of it is this horrible interaction with this, like, mouth-breathing fan base, and it's just like, fuck. And once they realise, well, that's our audience, they play to the audience. So Fantano sure. was obviously doing the same from a certain point of view. But ultimately, yeah, I think as Craig, you know, and yourself, all of us kind of were like, well, look, you know, I don't think he's, you know, fucking about to, like, launch a Klan rally or anything. I still think he's obnoxious. But ultimately, yeah, it was an interesting kind of storm in a teacup, really, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one expects that the accompanying website to the needle drop will either now blow up or just disappear.
Yeah.
Well, someone who is no stranger to controversy, or controversy, depending on what part of the world you're from.
Whether you work for Sky Sports News or not,
is Eminem. Eminem's back in the news. Yay. A lot of people are hailing Eminem as a bit of a champion of free speech and, you know, good things political, I guess, because he blasted our good friend Donald Trump, who I keep trying to not mention on the show anymore, in a freestyle that was aired at the Black Entertainment Television Awards.
Yes, I believe so.
Let's have a little snippet of it.
Intensity's heightened. Tensions are rising. Trump, when it comes to giving a shit, you're stingy as I am. Except when it comes to having the balls to go against me, you hide them. Cause you don't got the nuts like an empty asylum. Racism's the only thing he's fantastic for. Cause that's how he gets his rocks off and he's orange. Yeah, sick tan. That's why he wants us to disband, because he cannot withstand the fact we're not afraid of Trump walking on eggshells. I came to stomp. That's why he keeps screaming, drain the swamp, because he's in quicksand. It's like we take a step forwards, then backwards. But this is his form of distraction. Plus, he gets an enormous reaction when he attacks the NFL. So
now, a friend of No Encore, Joshua Hughes, who has guested before and will hopefully again, has said and made a cogent point, which I guess beat us to the punch, in that he reckons that if this wasn't about Donald Trump, people would be like, well, this is a bit crap, isn't it?
Well, of course, yeah. But and also, if it wasn't Eminem, people would say it's a bit crap. I mean, listen, I'm sorry, right? Straight away, guys, I have to just call you up on the fact that Eminem has tried to rhyme the word orange.
Oh.
Right, yeah. Now, you would presume that in Rap Battle 101, like, your first lesson is like, hello, my name's Mr. Young, you can call me Dre. Nothing rhymes with orange.
What about door hinge?
No, I didn't know.
It depends how you say it, I suppose. Yeah.
Nothing rhymes with orange, and Eminem has already made the worst mistake in the world. If anything rhymes with orange,
please tweet at No Encore Show.
Syringe, I think, is a close.
But here's the thing. You think, like, in this, you know, at this stage, at this point in Eminem's career, where he's not really making great music, but he has become, like, so intensely kind of involved with rap as an art form, and you'd be like, well, this is the perfect setting, him just freestyling. This should be amazing. This is, like, where he's most comfortable. And it's kind of just cringe, isn't it? Yeah, it's very sloppy. The punchlines are kind of feel like add-ons that are, it's extremely clumsy. First of all, I must say, the beard that he's rocking at the moment, or the stubble, that is drawn on, right?
He looked like he was wearing makeup. Like, he looked like he was wearing a lot of makeup. Like, he was, like, done up like a bit like a clown.
Yeah, but his beard looks like, you know, the bad guy from Popeye? You know, with just like, you know, seven sprouting hairs.
Well, some people said that he looks like Mariah Carey when she dressed up like Eminem in one of her videos. I think it's the song Obsession, maybe. And they put up like a side by side, and I was like, oh my God, they're not wrong.
Also, it's a bit like, oh, he's calling out Donald Trump.
In a car park.
Yeah.
In a car park. With a posse behind him.
What's his end goal? Like, at one point, it sounds like he's literally like, come on, Donald, like, rap against
me. Step into the cypher, like.
He was also kind of saying, like, you know, I've got fans who I guess like Trump, and I'm going to make it real easy for you. Fuck you if you're not with me, blah, 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 blah. I mean, this might be like great if it was the late 90s and Eminem was genuinely shocking to some people. We talked about Marilyn Manson on the last episode. Like, he's put out a video with Johnny Depp for Say 10, which again, you're just like, well, look, no one's going to be surprised by this. No one, like, nothing shocking anymore.
You see, this is the thing though, because like, who's he really aiming this at? I don't think it's at sort of like young rap fans. I think this is Eminem realizing that right now, the people who think he is shocking, the people who think he is, you know, newsworthy and, you know, completely radical, are the sort of like 40 and 50 year olds who witnessed his rise close to 20 years ago and still think he's the cutting edge of cool.
And you think he's deliberately now being like, well, this is my audience, well, this is my...
I'll put it this way. I mean, like, when you see people like, you know, Keith Olbermann and stuff saying like, you know, oh my God, I'm suddenly a rap fan.
Oh God almighty.
And yeah, because frankly, Eminem was the last major rap star that he's heard of. Like, now he hasn't listened to Pimp or Butterfly.
He's not going to do well at the 2017 No Encore Quiz of the Year, guys.
Yeah, no. He doesn't know how rap culture has moved on. But Eminem, as a mouthpiece, actually connects with a very different audience.
You see, I don't think Eminem has that level of self-awareness that he's like, well, this will get me in with this demographic. Oh, I think he's just like, I'm going to go after Trump.
I agree with you. I don't necessarily think that this was a sort of a calculated move.
You took
the
word out of my
mouth. I think this is just how it's worked out.
I don't think it is calculated. The one thing I will say about this is, now Pitchfork put up a thing today where they were like, Eminem's thing might make you roll your eyes, but it's important.
Yeah, and
I didn't read past the headline, so I can't talk about the article, but what I will say about this is, like, with that basic sentiment, I would agree, and I think he is genuinely pissed off, and I think it is important that we're seeing these protests in the NFL, and we're seeing an awful lot of people, major celebrities, and, like, you know, people who are, like, kind of very, very top, hardworking journalists, sports stars, across the, you know, the whole thing. There's never been, with America, at least not in my lifetime, something of this magnitude where people are so unwilling to take it lying down.
Yeah.
And I actually believe Eminem, conviction-wise, I believe him in this freestyle, which I don't think is great.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt.
I believe
he
believes everything he's saying. I don't think he's doing it for numbers.
It's the execution.
Or, and even, like, the content. But, like, and again... You
know, the content and the execution.
No, but basically, just like his hoodie. No, that's what we're saying.
What I'm saying is, I just believe that he's pissed off. I believe he's genuinely moved to this thing, even if it's a bit sloppy and a bit, you know...
Can you fucking blame him?
But that's what I'm saying. Not everyone's doing it. And I kind of feel like the more this happens, the more...
Why, like, you say this, but here's the thing. I mean, like, YG literally released a track called Fuck Donald Trump.
Mm.
does it get any of this sort of recognition and notice?
No, but Eminem is still like
the
iconic.
Thing. Exactly. Mainstream figure. He's this icon. And as well, I should jump in and say, like, I will preempt at this point. I imagine there will be 1,000 think pieces by this time next week talking about how it's a white rapper who's got this sort of recognition.
With black guys in the background who don't say anything.
That's a bit odd, all right.
I absolutely agree that it's not.
That stood out like a sore thumb.
But it will happen. It will happen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you going to write one of those?
Absolutely not, sir.
Fair enough. Well, I hope the likes of Kanye and Kendrick and Jay-Z will do this exact same on such a high-profile level. Sorry, speaking of Kendrick, do we all get tickets to that gig? Are we going to do it?
No. I believe you might be going, though, David.
I'm going.
God damn you.
But, okay, look, if you guys are upset that you guys can't join me at Kendrick Lamar, there's another rap sensation coming to town next year. The return... of
Return the Macklemore.
Macklemore. Oh, yeah. I said it about 2 episodes ago. I went, oh, you know, if that gig happens, I'm there.
Yeah.
We're all going.
He can't get enough.
Come on,
I think we should.
We played it down. We knew the gig was happening.
No, hashtag.
We knew we were going as
hashtag
well.
Dave does Macklemore too.
Well, anyway, returning to the news, one act that you can usually count on to kind of remain apolitical is Maroon 5. And apparently they've trying to like stay out of this kind of all the controversy at the moment, but they stumbled into... their new album is entitled Red Pill Blues. Mm-hmm. And they don't seem to have realised that this term, obviously from The Matrix, has famously or infamously now been co-opted by men's rights activists awful people.
But also completely misused. It's like that because they're like, you know, oh, we're woken up now to the truth that women are awful human beings or something. But like, first of all, right, the lads who cling desperately to The Matrix as this kind of anti-woman propaganda, are they not aware of the Wachowskis?
Yeah,
that's a very good point.
How does that piece of information get past them? Like, oh, you know, that's just a footnote. No. Are you kidding me? And also, I rewatched The Matrix recently. It's just a really good sci-fi film. Like, it's not this kind of treatise on
men's
rights. Like, what the how did this happen?
Well, clearly, Adam Levine just agrees with you that The Matrix is a really good film. And he hasn't been, like, aware of anything going on in the culture for the last 2 years.
He just hasn't hit Google, has he? I mean, this is the thing. Like, how do you title your album something like this and not realise that it might have some other use?
Well, this is the thing.
I wouldn't fucking put an article out with a headline until I'd Googled various, like...
Well,
changes
even just,
in it to see if it would hit something else.
Yeah, like even if you weren't being cautious, but you would think that an artist would check to see, oh, well, has there been another album put out like this? I don't want to double up, you know, I want it to be an original thought.
Surely somebody in their corporation that I presume they have would be like, lads?
I mean, the band have released a statement and they said the band is shocked that this has even come up.
Shocked!
At this time. And also, like, the artwork itself, the artwork is very plain and generic.
Yeah.
It's not even like an image on there. They can easily change this. Plenty of time. They're not going to have a problem with printers.
Yeah. Now, if they've some Moves Like Jagger style jams on it, all will be forgiven, I think.
Moves Like Jagger is a tune.
Yes.
Payphone's all right. Won't Go Home Without You is great.
You're a big fan of that.
It's a great song.
Yeah. It's no Moves Like
Jagger.
It rips
off the Police hardcore, but it's very fun. Some of their songs, though, I mean, like, you know, She Will Be Loved, it's a bit... You know,
what?
Yeah, that was their big breakthrough
single. Yeah, I know, but making an argument for
it? No, I'm making an argument against it.
Oh, sorry, I think you're wrong.
This
okay,
Love
yeah.
was their breakthrough single.
Oh, okay, well, She Will Be Loved was definitely from that record, though.
That
was like second
songs
or third.
About Jane.
It's a very forceful pop song. I don't know. It's certainly not what Katy Perry would call purposeful pop. Nor are Maroon 5, who, quite frankly, you know, I'm shocked they're even still a going concern, but I guess... There's still enough fans out there, I guess. I don't know.
They're quite big, aren't they? Like, I'm not that shocked.
They're doing work.
They're
at some level or another. Rounding out the news agenda tonight, for 3 men who worked in a music magazine around the time of the Garth Brooks saga.
Oh, this was great.
There is cold sweats thinking about the possibility that Noel Gallagher's appearance at Sound Festival, and indeed the Sound Festival.
Liam Gallagher.
Noel would not be pleased with
big
that.
Trouble.
Yeah.
He meant Liam.
Noel wouldn't turn up because he doesn't care about the fans.
Shots fired.
As you were.
Massive statement.
As you were,
huge
LG.
The Sound Festival, under threat by residents' actions, basically.
Pitchforks at the ready.
This is such a bizarre setting for a gig. It's Western Airport, which is actually just up the road from Big LXP, my hometown. So these are probably neighbours of mine.
All right.
They formally objected.
You're going to come down to your dad doing a sign.
We don't actually have a verdict yet, but yeah, there has been a court challenge to drink and dance licences. I didn't realise you had to have a specific dance
yeah,
licence.
Yeah, you do. Yeah,
it's like
Footloose.
It's like Footloose out there, mate.
No, it's actually very specific. Yeah, it's more to do with insurance than it is the actual licence itself.
Someone sprains an ankle.
You see some of the shapes that'd be thrown at Liam Gallagher again? You kidding me?
Yeah, so. Either way,
You referenced Garth Brooks there. I remember, I'm sure we all have our own versions of this story, but I remember one day in particular when I was writing a news story about the Garth Brooks situation, and it was changed about 97 times while I was trying to go off and work on other stories, and I had to keep going back into the fucking Hot Press CMS, which, by the way, is a mess. And I was like, okay, right, I'll just change this now. And then I was like, oh, this new thing has come in, and this person's made a statement, and oh, the editor of the magazine has now put in his own 2 cents, and oh, can you go back and change this one? And I was like, I want to throw myself out a fucking window.
Yeah, no, it was extraordinary. It was. And what's more, though, like, this suggests they just learned nothing. I mean, why this court case is coming before the courts
at this state, yeah, you think, like, this would all be taken care of
in mid-October.
It's very odd.
For a gig on the 25th and 26th of October.
Well, we reached out to Hot Press Magazine about their practices and they didn't get back to us, so I just don't know. But what I do know is that Cullen was just very excited. He wanted us to get to Songs of the Week.
Yes.
Because the charge of Songs of the Week will be led this time by Noel Gallagher and his High Flying Birds. He's still rocking that weird name. This song is called Holy Mountain. That's Holy Mountain by Noel Gallagher, and I said on Twitter that I thought it was a very brave choice of him to release a Slade song.
Oh, that's a good shout.
As his new single. But I've had other shouts too. I guess friend of the show. I've never met him, but he seems like a nice dude. Sean Cabina, I think that's his stage name. Seems a good lad. If you're listening, Sean, your shout that this song sounds a lot like The Vaccines was, I think, pretty spot on as well. And I saw one other comparison doing the rounds.
It reminds me of Saplan Pour Moi.
That's the one.
Yeah.
But obviously nowhere near as good or as fun.
Very happy with the song. He says his kids love it and the kids will love it.
Well, are we still the kids?
No.
Do we love it?
No, I'm definitely not.
No, we're definitely not the
and
kids.
And I definitely Damn don't it. Love it. No. It's pretty bad.
I don't think he's ever sounded worse.
The comments on this, by the way, the YouTube comments on this are gold. It's really? Noel Gallagher fans infighting.
Because like, people are reacting really badly to it.
Yeah, it's like Civil War.
People are like, you know, this is the worst lead single he's ever put out. This is terrible. This is absolute garbage. This is awful. And then in the midst of that, you also have people being like, you know, he's fucking real and he's having fun. Leave him alone. We all said the first single of his last album was terrible and then we loved it in the end. Noel's the only real musician we have left, you know, blah, 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 blah. And like, just look at the comments. Like, it's amazing. It's a gated community of idiots.
This is the thing I'm
having
mean, like,
a go at each other.
Yeah, I mean, like, Noel Gallagher occupies the space the same as, like, you know, JK Rowling does and what she does and a couple of others. No, in that, like, the fans are just worshipping anything they do.
Yeah.
Okay. Even if it completely contradicts something prior, they just go, oh, okay, you've changed your mind. That's perfect. Yeah, we'll go with that.
The Beyonce method, I believe.
Yeah. Like, this, I mean, you see, I'm on record here on this podcast saying that, like, I am so sick and tired of Noel Gallagher coming out before he released an album saying, like, this is going to blow your minds, it's a complete change up, and then it never is.
He's been saying that since the 90s. Like,
yeah, but to be fair, this is a bit different. Now, it's not good, but it is a bit different. At the very least, I will give this album a play to see if there are moments where it works.
And when he does get adventurous, it usually, like, pays off for him. Like, there was a couple of tracks on the last record, The Right Stuff, it's like a really good groove to it. Like, he is capable of kind of getting outside the meat and potatoes thing. And
he's tremendous on that. He's tremendous on that Corner Shop song, Spectral Mornings.
Yes. Yeah.
Corner Shop, by the way, maybe the most underrated band ever. Just putting it out there.
Listen, I talked to a band once who worked with Amorphous Androgynous. I had to check that it was the right one.
I can't believe you got that.
There.
Well done.
Once talked to a band who worked with them, and they said they heard a couple of the tracks that Noel Gallagher had made with them.
But he always says, for that. He always goes, oh, this other project I have is amazing. Album. I'm never going to put it out, though.
No, but they said, you know what? It's actually pretty good. But he got cold feet. He got scared.
Well, he kind of justified it by saying, well, actually, what they did was they just took my work and made it their own record. And I wasn't having any of that. Like, it wasn't mine.
To be fair, at this point, what I would say is, I mean, and like, for example, we've said it before about like Ed Sheeran, for instance. I'm sure Ed Sheeran could go and be in like a fucking post-hardcore band. Like, musicians who have a certain level of talent and skill can always
can turn their
go and sure. do something yeah. completely yeah. different. But obviously, they get to certain points in their career where they can't realistically do that because the fans need to be so... It's same but different, you know?
Like,
fair enough, I understand that.
There's a level of solo composition at the same time, though, that's very difficult to do.
I mean, like...
I don't think Ed Sheeran could write a post-hardcore song.
I think he could. I mean, why couldn't he?
Yeah.
Why couldn't Noel Gallagher do it?
Because he's a sap.
But I think it's just because they're scared, man. Or it's just like, you know, well, I have to serve this fan base and I can't... like, for all we know, there are fucking, like, recordings in their respective studio vaults that they have that they're like, well, I can never release this.
Sure. Yeah.
And I'd
love
to see those sides of them. Now, granted, I know what Craig is saying. Craig is like, well, look, you know, he's slightly trying something different here. But what he's trying here is still very safe. It's still very... still very British glam rock and roll, and it's just like it does sound like Slade. I'm not wrong.
It definitely does.
It's not as fun as it should be.
I think it's fun. I mean, like, I don't think it's good, but I do think
I didn't enjoy it.
I mean, I think he's stuck between stations in that respect, though.
I had no problem hitting repeat on this, but it's good.
There's a bit too much radio focus for it to actually be sort of adventurous, but then slightly too much. You know, well, frankly, too much adventure is flattering.
Whoever put the fucking...
But it's a little bit too different. Whoever put the fucking... Like, oh, this is a good pop
song. The fucking
song.
Whistle flourish on it needs to be shot out of a cannon.
Is it a recorder or something? I think it's a... I don't know.
It's very marching it's band. I don't know.
I like the fact the album this is from is called Who Built the Moon. Yeah. So is he one of the... Like, we add him to the musicians as conspiracy theorists?
Is he going
theorists?
In with B.O.B.,
yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I reckon... You know, the album, this could be the most experimental thing on there. I'll give it a go. But, like, this is just bad.
Let's move on to the next track. It is Sam Smith.
Oh, good.
Tune called Pray sounds like this. I am still here and I'm still your disciple. I'm down on my knees. I'm begging you, please. I'm broken, alone, and afraid. I'm not a saint. I'm more of a sinner. I don't want to lose, but I fear for the winners. When I try to explain, the words right away. That's why I am stood here today. And I'm gonna pray. You think you've heard Sam Smith? Welcome, Sam Smith with hi-hats.
Yeah, I mean, it's very odd, this song, because it's Sam Smith doing his thing and then Timbaland doing his thing over here, and they don't really meet. Like,
it's certainly not up there with Timbaland's glorious golden collaboration with Run Republic.
I know you two love
Apologize is at you.
Oh, that's man. A great song.
It is. It's an amazing song. Yeah, love it.
That alone, I'm out.
Well,
I'm
you've Timbaland again kind of doing, you know, like kind of bird noises at the start of this. Or like that was more of a seal noise, I suppose.
I think that this is the best use of Sam Smith. I think he actually does a good impression of the soul singers that he's obviously very enamored with on this one.
You think?
But he's still doing an impression.
Yeah,
like, I'm not willing to give him a gold star here.
See,
but
I don't think he sells the kind of, maybe like the sensuality or something that a lot of people Timbaland has worked with, and like his most interesting work, that kind of wink and a nudge and that kind of edginess to Timbaland's best stuff. I mean, Sam Smith is not that person this to really sell it. Like,
he seems impervious.
Yes,
in the worst way possible. As in, like, there is no one else's influence or no one else's collaborative energy that seems to adjust what Sam Smith does. He has one note, he has one tone, one approach, and by God, he's going to use it. It doesn't matter if Timbaland is doing a beat behind him. It doesn't matter if you bring in brass bands and an orchestra.
I disagree on that one. I disagree because I think that he was boxed in effectively on this one, and that's the point. I think the last song we had, Too Good at Goodbyes, whatever, was too big, too airy, too expansive. This was like, at least put him in a house, and I thought it was good. I think it's a good song.
Really?
However,
I mean, when you listen to that bridge and the sort of like stressed vocal gymnastics of it,
But that's the point. He's a bit stressed because like someone has actually put a fucking roof on him for once. And that's kind of what I found slightly interesting. Now, granted, that doesn't speak very good for him as an artist. I mean, that I enjoyed him being constrained. And what I would say is I came away from the song being like, oh, I wish like Michael Kiwanuka was singing on this or something. I think he'd do a much better job.
Yeah, yeah.
Sam Smith will always have the Sam Smith problem. There you go. Yeah. Craig, you did say that you wanted to have a go at this one. So
I can't abide Sam Smith.
You can't sanction his buffoonery.
I really can't. And Timbaland, I mean, I know he released, he put out a mixtape, a kind of solo mixtape about a year, maybe 2 years ago now. That aside, I think he had a Rihanna kind of production on Auntie. But he's been doing very little. And this is just like, it's such a far cry from how boundary pushing and brilliant he was. And as I said at the start, I mean, I just don't think... Well, it's actually an interesting point, Dave, you make about it, like maybe this boxing in or even recontextualizing Sam Smith, but it seems too separate for me. Like as Cullen was saying, like it just didn't change anything about the whole Sam Smith thing at all for me, and I didn't even think it was a good song. I just didn't like it.
Okay, fair enough. I think it's a 3 out of 5, but at the same time, it's not going to trouble my songs the ear list or anything. Up next, Son Lux, who we've never featured on the show before, I don't think, and he's a very interesting experimental producer. His new song is called Dream State. How we'd bleed. We never fought for breath. Peace and prophetess, we were. This I liked. I think that Son Lux is a very interesting guy. I think he's excellent at world building and being very expansive, quite the opposite of what we were just saying. He did an EP, which is a remix of his previous record. I forget the name of it, but he brought in Lord for a track, and I thought he used her very effectively. I thought they worked very well together. I can't really get a bead on this guy, you know, as a personality, but I love what he's all about. I love his soundscapes, if you allow me to use such a pretentious word. He's very, very good at this.
The wordless hook on this could be really annoying because it is that trope that we've heard a lot in pop music, and it's ever so slightly a bit Imagine Dragons-y, but everything going on around it is so fractured and almost disorientating. It's really, really interesting, and I think that's what makes it work. And like, he's obviously so indebted to like hip hop. There's elements of trip hop there, and so it hangs together somehow. And yeah, I really liked it as well. I thought it was a great song.
Yeah, it was Alternate Worlds was the EP that you were talking about with Lord's feature. I think that at least old Arcade Fire would be standing up applauding this. This is...
Because he's managed to also nail the kind of epic pop scope of it as well.
Yeah absolutely. Yeah, and I think it's what they kind of tried to do around like Reflector and that sort of time. It's like, it surprised me though, like when you see this on Spotify, it has edit. In parentheses. And I suppose in one sense it makes sense because it doesn't necessarily flow as you would be expecting. But then again, like the glitchiness is used as a weapon throughout the song anyway. 100%. So it's not like, you know, you're getting whiplash from the effect or whatever. This was really enjoyable, yeah. I thought it was great.
It's excellent. He's just very, very sharp. And like, yeah, the non-edit, I presume it's for radio purposes, runs at about 5 minutes. And I found myself like 2.5 minutes in. The song almost comes to a full stop. And you're like, that was great, and that feels like a really complete work. And then all of a sudden it takes a little breath and then just essentially does what it did before. And yet it doesn't feel like, you know,
repetitive,
a sandwich
or
like something being folded onto itself. He's a guy with an awful lot of ideas, and this one manages to both be that kind of weird, opaque, you know, arty or like art house kind of thing, while also being a bit of a club banger.
Much so. He pulls it off.
Another group that used to, at the very least, have a lot of ideas and yet still make club bangers, the Go Team are back. This is called Semicircle Song.
Yeah.
So full disclosure, I was absolutely amazed by the Go Team when they first arrived. I saw them live a couple of times. I thought Thunder Lightning Strike was an incredible record.
Fantastic, listen.
Haven't they broken up like six times? One of them, in the Hot Press chat room at Electric Picnic one year.
You see, here's the thing. Yeah. Okay, look, it's really, the Go Team is a one-man band.
Yeah,
Ian Parton is the Go Team. He came up with the idea in, I think, like his parents' kitchen is when he actually recorded that first album.
Yeah.
And it basically also led to the stage where they were a completely different live band than they were on record. Because they had different vocalists and they had different musicians, and there were obviously limitations in terms of how many tracks they could use and blah, 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 blah. They lost their way, I think it's fair to say. Does this show any signs of getting back on track?
Well, he's talked about this, like this song being unlike any other song they've done before, while still retaining that kind of Go Team feel. And I think that is fairly true. I mean, it's not necessarily what I expected. It's still that primary coloured, you know, Go Team thing, but it's not as in your face. There's a bit more room to breathe. It's a bit more kind of playful, as opposed to just racing out of the traps. That said, I don't know if it did a lot for me.
This to me felt like the American version. Are they American or Canadian? Are they American?
American, yeah.
Okay, this felt like the American version of Los Campesinos, who I like, but I felt like, I guess you guys not loving the Los Campesinos record that came out this year. Some kind of weird
Go
mirror
team are English.
They're from Brighton.
Are they?
Yeah, they're from Brighton. Yeah.
I know, right?
Yeah.
I'll tell you why.
It sounds like a fucking cheerleader's pep rally.
Well, this is what I'm
going to
say, because they got a song called Huddle Formation,
yeah,
which was used in my beloved One Tree Hill back in the day. Oh. So naturally enough, I just assumed they were American.
Dave and I have been deep in the One Tree Hill chats for the past week, by the way, bizarrely.
I hate One Tree
Hill.
We're
called Hillers, mate. Hiller.
Scum.
And also, just brief aside, if you want to join us on our journey through Aaron Sorkin's terrible, awesome The Newsroom. Hit
terribly
us up on Twitter.
Awesome. Yeah. Myself,
we're doing it right now.
Myself, Cullum, and Josh, the aforementioned Josh, are all hate watching The Newsroom. Yeah. Craig is.
I think I'm going to dive in this weekend. I've got
first,
a bit of a break
for
from
the
work.
First
and I'm going to. Yeah, I think.
Let's do it,
and shout out to Dahi, who's currently off in France writing his new EP or album, I guess.
Yep.
But I think he's making time as well to get a hate watch in, hate rewatching of The Newsroom.
I'm looking forward to it.
It's a fascinatingly compelling, terrible show, The Newsroom.
So terrible.
My God, it's
and awesome.
Infuriating. So, anyway. No, in this song, right, there's a point where they all line up pep rally style. Mm-hmm. And one of them goes, hey, 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 I'm such and such. But the way that she says it is exactly how Taylor Swift says it on Shake It Off. And
yeah.
I was like, oh my God, yeah, Taylor Swift has managed to actually copyright a delivery of a thing. That's all I can think about when I hear this. This is lightweight and fine and whatever.
Yeah, lightweight's about right.
I guess if you're a hardcore fan, you're delighted to have them back. But it did nothing for me.
Yeah, I unfortunately agree. Like I say,
how are they not American?
I just don't know, man. They are actually English, yeah. And I mean, what they specialised in was that like crazy high energy pep rally sort of stuff.
That can get a bit exhausting.
Well, it can, but you know what? Like on that first record, at the very least, like they managed it. They turned out an album that was superb. Like I say, they kind of lost steam and lost their way somewhat. And yeah, this does not suggest that the tide is
okay. Turned. Look, if Craig thinks that upbeat, super pop, marching band stuff is draining, how will he feel about the return of Sufjan Stevens?
As the monster showed his face, there she waits for her children in the shade.
This 7-minute song is called Wallowa Lake Monster.
There he is there, the party starter himself.
Well, to be honest, I feel like playing like a 30-second snippet of the song is almost do this song quite a disservice, because it's kind of a novel in 7 minutes. Like, there's a lot going on here. Now, this comes from The Greatest Gift, a mixtape comprised of unreleased outtakes, remixes, and demos from the Carrie and Lowell sessions, which comes out next month, I think?
Yes, I think you're right.
Now, this song I thought was a masterpiece. I thought it was brilliant, and I've only heard it like about 5 times, so I'm hesitant to put those massive words on it, but like, this took me away. This was like quite spellbinding, and in a way that only Sufjan can do, I guess. And obviously, you know, like, he's got to know what time of year he's dropping this song at, like,
sure,
you know,
yeah,
trees
yeah.
falling, yeah. Like, leaves falling from trees, and like, you know, like darker evenings and yeah. all that kind of stuff, and everyone wanting to be a little bit more cozy and warm. This is beautiful.
I agree with you. This is a fantastic song. I wonder if, and this sounds counterintuitive when you first say it, but was this song just too good and too complete to be put on Carrie and Lowell? Because it almost tells a lot of the story of that entire record.
In one song.
In one track.
Yeah.
And so I don't know how you'd actually place this on that album where it wouldn't just completely overpower the more sort of nuanced tales that the rest of the songs represent.
That's a really good point. But the fact that it was unreleased up till now is just like a testament to the man's fucking genius. Like, I mean, yeah. he's incredible. And yeah, he's one of those musicians or one of those artists where you're just instantly kind of thinking of comparisons to like novelists. And he's so, as you say, Dave, it tells an incredible story. The outro is splendid as well.
It's just which is also
literally epic as well.
Yeah,
it's briefly hinted at about 4 minutes in, and then it comes back for the last two, and it's incredible, and it has echoes of Father John Misty's "So Growing Old and Magic Man."
Yeah, fantastic.
That kind of, you know, Vangelis style synth coming in,
yeah,
which, you know, should be jarring and shouldn't marry what's come before. But I think in both those cases, the author of this is so in tune with what they're doing, so confident, and so just the belief here is incredible because I guess they've lived it. I mean, and
this is exactly it. Yeah, I mean, like, and yeah, we'll come to this topic a little later in the show. But when you have absolute confidence in what you're doing because it, you know, comes from the heart, legitimately.
Yeah.
It's an easy thing to carry off.
It's that great line of many, almost every line in the film Glengarry Glen Ross is great. But there's that bit where Al Pacino says, well, your man's like, I don't know what to tell the cop, I don't know what to tell him. And he goes, the truth, always tell the truth, is the easiest thing to remember.
Yeah.
It's very true. Really.
And on that poetic note,
that was beautiful, Dave.
Thanks, man. Hey, wipe away a tear. Let's welcome back for our final song this week, our boy. He's been interviewed on the show, and we featured him many a time. Mm-hmm. Hamilton Lighthouser's back, and he's brought Angel Olsen for company. This song, which came out of nowhere, is called Heartstruck Brackets, Wild Hunger. Close brackets. Did you like that, Cullum? Okay, so yeah, this came out of nowhere, and much like with Rostam, I'd be up for a full collaboration of this. I really enjoyed it. Now, Cullum, you had a pitch problem with this song before we get to the actual song itself.
I think it's actually literally just the version that I got on my phone.
Cullum's ears are too well tuned for this kind of lark.
Just sounded like Angel Olsen was clipped somewhat, and it was like, frankly, that impacted my enjoyment of the song, and I was really, really disappointed because I think this is very, very good indeed. I think she is a really good foil for him because she injects the sort of theatricality that is basically his bread and butter. And, you know, it's Hamilton Lighthouser. His voice can drown out most of the instrumentation, never mind a guest, but she kind of holds her own. And as well, I mean, we said a couple of weeks ago that there was signs on Rostam's album that there was a hangover from his working with Hamilton Lighthouser. Looks like the feeling's mutual.
I said before, it's like I'd be very happy for Hamilton to do another album with Rostam or go off and collaborate with others and just do his entire Hamilton Lighthouser's World Music Adventure extravaganza, which is what he appears to be up for doing.
Well,
which,
I think it would be Hamilton Lighthouse's walking tour of New York, really, wouldn't it?
I'd sign up for it in a heartbeat, my friend. I would take a whole album of this. I think I agree with what you said. They complement each other very well. This is a gorgeous cinematic stroll, and I loved it. Craig?
It's kind of brimming with passion. Of course, Hamilton just like knocks it out of power. I'm not sure I was quite as on board with Angel Olsen's contributions in terms of, I feel like he kind of could have just gone alone to a certain extent. No, she brings something to it, but I'm not sure it is really all that transformative. So it seemed like she was a bit of an add-on. That was just my takeaway.
Craig's not one for gender representation,
yeah,
I guess.
That's it. That's what I'm saying.
No, I know what you're saying. I mean, like, it is a simplistic song. And yeah, I mean, like, does it need a partner on it? Not necessarily. No. And she's definitely more of a supporting actor on this one. He does take the lead. And yeah, that's kind of part of the reason why I would like to hear more from this pair, because I had never put them together before. I never thought of this.
As a
tag team. So now that I've gotten this taste, I'm like, I'll take a full album. You know, if that's what you guys want to do. If you're listening, guys, three men in Dublin, and I'm sure a lot more, would enjoy a collaborative album from the pair of you. So
hear.
Get on it.
And if that doesn't have them doing it, nothing will. In terms of albums that we do have to judge this week, Kalayla finally with her debut full-length effort. We've heard a couple of the tracks from it before, but Take Me Apart has finally hit shelves. This is LMK. Yeah, long awaited, I think it's fair to say. We first saw this lady, well, you two did. I was getting bullied by David McSavage. Forbidden Fruit 2015 was it in fact your Irish Bow at that time, I think?
I believe it was, yeah. Could stand corrected, but yeah, I was kind of aware of her for a couple of years even at that point. She'd put out the Cut For Me EP a couple of years beforehand and it blew me away. We got another kind of mixtape / EP a couple of years ago around about that time, but it's been very kind of like a drip of stuff to really kind of get us, you know, gasping for more, to be quite honest. Yeah. It's been very long awaited, as you say, and for me, I think this is like, it's been worth the wait. It feels like that kind of Sampha thing where she's bided her time, she's come back, like she come out with a really kind of complete, immaculate grand statement, I think. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm digging this.
I'll be honest, I think this is way beyond Sampha's sort of patience and restraint and so on and so forth. I was stunned to read after listening to this album that she is 34 years old.
Mm.
Which I think for one is a very, very fresh break from the sort of idea of, oh my god, we found somebody who can sing, get them an album quickly, you know, shove them out at 18 and you know, releases just peppering people's socials and radio and so on and so forth to just try to make them a star. But what's more, it feels to me as though every moment spent waiting, on her part at least, has built her confidence, has built her sort of armory in terms of stories and in terms of the wealth of emotion that she can pump into a track. And what has resulted from it is something incredibly special.
I didn't know her age until you just said it there, and ordinarily that wouldn't matter here or there, but I actually am not surprised to learn that she's 34. I mean, to look at her, yeah, you'd be like 25 or something, I don't know. But I mean, like, ultimately what I would say is this feels very, not only does the album feel quite lived in, but it does sound like someone who, whether they're writing a novel and they're writing it one chapter at a time over the space of 4 years or something, they're not in a hurry, even though they might be desperate to have it out there and done. But at the same time, it just means that all of those chapters mean something. They make a lot of sense. Because obviously, you know, the old cliche, it's a truism, I suppose, rather. You know, you put an awful lot of yourself into these things, and particularly your first proper shot in anger. So, yeah, I mean, that, like, just listening to that, I was like, yeah, well, that just makes an awful lot of sense based on the resulting material.
Exactly. Yeah. And what's more, like, we talked a little while ago, or at least I made the point when we were listening to, I think it was Selena Gomez, at the same week as Kalayla, and I was just like, I don't believe Selena Gomez when she's singing Fetish.
Sure, yeah.
I believe Kalayla.
This feels really lived in, yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, when you get to tracks like Enough on this record where she's talking about, like, being the other woman,
yeah,
you can tell this isn't, like, you know, Jesse brought someone else to the prom or something. This is legitimate emotional baggage.
I think that's on our Double Love, the Sweet Valley podcast on the Headstuff Podcast Network. But absolutely. And I mean, ultimately, she did an excellent interview, I must say, actually, while I think of it, with The Quietist with Tara Joshi, which everyone should go and read. Very, very interesting, very deep dive. She seems like a deep thinker and someone who is also, crucially, totally unafraid to bear all, whether it's literally on the album cover of this record or whether it's on the song's subject matter themselves. And it's amazing how she can do that with something like we heard there, Let Me Know. And like, that's pretty much just about, hey, look, I'm out. A guy I'm hooking up with, are you out as well? Drop the act, let me know if you want to hook up. Whereas you have a lot more deeper stuff as you get along with the record. And it's that level of kind of conviction and just the ability to step into these songs. Because, you know, I've been slagged off by a couple of people for this phrase that I use on Twitter when I said that this album is gorgeous musical quicksand.
There was no slagging off. It was a beautiful turn of phrase.
But it is. Like, I sank into this record. I was like... And I listened to it as well. I mean, I went home for the weekend, last weekend, something I do quite rarely, and I don't terribly enjoy doing so. So on the bus home, I threw on my new headphones, which I've also been getting slagged about for getting a pair of swank new headphones, and I just sank into the seat. And I was like, I don't really want this bus journey to end because I'm actually going somewhere with this record. And I also really enjoyed that, like, you know, in the first track, Frontline, you have a thing where, like, you kind of have this kind of non-diegetic sound or whatever, or like you kind of have this background noise, like someone like even like putting the alarm off on a car.
Yeah.
And ordinarily I'd be like, wow, what the fuck is that doing there? But this genuinely felt like the start of a night. And unlike Lord's album, which was meant to be this concept album, like one wild night in which all the emotions are felt, I thought that was trying so hard, so unbelievably hard, to show you how red she is and what an English major and all this kind of crap. Whereas I got none of that from this. I got complete and utter authority and authenticness, I suppose, if that's a word.
Sure. Authenticity.
Authenticity is what I meant to say. Thank you, Cullum. Can't put a good man down after 4 points. And, this is
you tried your best to put me down for the rest of the fucking show.
This is a terrific record.
Yeah, I mean, the word I would kind of, I keep returning to is like novelty in the best possible sense. There's so, like, sonically, there's these really novel kind of twists and turns. Every time she could, and it's a genre where you can easily step into cliche, she somehow avoids it, and you're kind of, there's nice surprises along. It's never the kind of thing she's going, you know, you think she's going to do. And, you know, it's, sorry, go.
No, I was gonna say on that point, what I would say is that, like, this is an album that manages to actually nod with deferential respect to 90s R&B.
I was about to say,
without
there is,
just being like, oh, that sounds dated.
There are sprinkles of Janet. There are sprinkles of, like, Aaliyah, I mean, Mariah Carey at times.
Yeah, but she's kind of she's so much her own thing. And it is like, it feels like she's carrying, like, a torch for that, you know, melodic kind of gold rush of the, you know, of 90s R&B. But underneath it, you have this production which is constantly shifting and contorting, and it just reframes the whole thing. And she's kind of what we're maybe hoping Cassie would end up being before she just got disinterested in music.
Yeah, the other thing that has to be said about all this is that, and Kalayla's on record herself saying that she thinks that the producers anchored the album, long-term collaborators, Arca and Jam City from Night Slugs are basically the two who are responsible for the majority of this record. And anchored is the perfect word here, because it feels as though she, lyrically and musically, can kind of twist and contort whatever way she wants, as long as the core of that tune is there and the producers have managed to do that. Vice versa, she can be quite straightforward and quite, you know, direct on a song like Truth or Dare, but the producers can create something far more shape-shifting around her.
I was going to say, though, that I think bedded might be a more appropriate word, because if Alan Partridge was reviewing this album, I think he'd be like, this is basically sex music.
It's high-concept make-out music.
Is that what they're is that what they're teaching you in college? Isn't it?
I mean, I thought it was
It's part of consumption studies.
I thought it was interesting that she had Ronnie Madley Croft of the XX in here as a co-writer, because it kind of reminded me of how at the very start of this year we heard an XX album which lyrically and vocally was kind of classic songwriting, but Jamie XX had brought this immensely fresh feel to it. There's a little bit of that here as well.
I think you guys might have been more enamored with that record than I was.
Yeah, I really like it, I have to say.
I think it's good, but I thought that the best standouts on that was actually a song like Performance, where Rami Madley Croft was singing about the death of her parents. So it was that kind of thing of like that lived in thing again. I mean, like, and she's amazing. Like she's probably the standout part of the XX for me. And yeah, with this, I mean, a song like Blue Light is fucking incredible.
Yeah.
Like, and that, as Craig is saying, that kind of shape shifting, like, just song arrangement where it's constantly contorting and constantly moving around you, and just the confidence of this record is magnificent. I mean, everything about the execution is so strong on this one.
Yeah, and what's more, like, there's a song second to last here, Bluff, which is just, it's 1 minute, it's piano ballad,
yeah,
and it's legit, it's almost challenging you of just like, do you not buy this? And honestly, if you've been through the other 12 tracks, I would challenge you to, you know, not buy into that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to talk about some of Arca's contributions because, you know, stuff like Enough and On, I think that they're the moments when she really seems like she kind of becomes unmoored from her influences and does her own thing. Like, they're these kind of like almost disembodied productions, and she no longer sounds like the sum of her influences, and I think they really work well together. What's striking is that we keep individually picking different moments, which is always a great sign.
Yeah.
It's just a fantastic record, I have to say.
And it's that rare, wonderful moment where it's, as Craig kind of alludes to there, it's everything is in tandem. Like, yes, she's never lost.
Oh, no.
They're never lost. It's a pretty strong union.
And again, taking your time over the record, there's something to be said for it.
There you go. I mean, like, ultimately, I hope that she doesn't follow up this one too soon.
Fuck yeah.
Because it's just so strong. So, yeah, I guess, I mean, we're all pretty much gushing on this one. Scores?
I'm doing it as 9.
Ooh.
I'm going to go 8.5.
I'm going 8.5 as well, but it's a very strong 8.5. Yeah, yeah. This is one of the albums of the year, for sure. I think it'll be in our top 20 at the end of the year, which we will be doing, of course. Well, you know, who knows, man? Who knows?
I'll fight
bit of suspense.
You if it isn't.
He's
getting aggressive.
It's been a long year, so don't forget that when you come to the quiz on Thursday, December 7th, no encore quiz at eventbrite.ie. We'll be talking about albums like this, so if you're a regular listener to the show, you might have a leg up on people. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But yeah, Kalayla's Take Me Apart gets high marks indeed. Other things you can listen to this week, I've been listening to a lot of stuff, so I'm going to try and get through this as fast as I possibly can. I did an interview with Horror, or as they're also known,
Ho9999.
Back in the day for this podcast, I finally got around to writing it up because they're doing a new tour in the UK. No Dublin date though, lads. What the fuck? Was it something I said?
Probably.
But I wrote it up for I wrote it up for Drowned Sound. So as a result, I went back to United States of Horror, which is out this year, and it's a terrific album. It holds up a few months later. I want to give another shout out to the Wolf Alice album, Visions of a Life. I know I mentioned it last week, but we didn't review it simply because it kind of flew under our radar at the last minute, and I don't want it to get lost in the shuffle. It's a terrific work. And we also have coming up, before I get to that, sorry, there's an album, a group, twin sisters, they're called
The
album's called Ash.
Cuban sisters, I believe.
The album's called Ash, and it's I threw it on only last night for the first time because I saw a lot of people raving about it, and it definitely lives up to the hype.
They're very enjoyable.
It's a very unique,
like,
patient, strange listen.
And yeah, I caught them at, I think, Longitude a couple of years ago, and I mean, frankly, it was one of those things where you could tell that the talent was there and the tunes weren't. Obviously, by now, the tunes have caught up.
Well, the album, as I say, it's called Ash, manages to kind of get maximalism from minimalism, which I found very,
very
impressive.
Good.
And what I will also say is the revisit is coming back. The reason it's been so sporadic lately is because it's just quite hard to tie a lot of people down to a recording session. So we have 1998, Revisit 1998 coming up very soon, possibly next week, with albums from Ash, The Brilliant Trees, Therapy, Sinead Lohan and the Mary Janes. We recorded that episode the other night. That'll be out soon. So lots of stuff there. Craig?
I've been listening to REM and Motown. There's two tips for you there. Check out those guys.
They're going to be big.
It's been real comfort listening. I've been stressed, but yeah.
I've given a spin to the new Stars album, There Is No Love in Fluorescent Light. It's released today as the podcast drops. It was streaming on NPR for the past week, which is where I found it. And enjoyable. A little bit hit or miss, perhaps, but frankly, that's always been Stars' way. And, you know, even if they miss every now and then, when they hit, for me, they are one of the best bands at just capturing genuine human emotion. And
I'd be curious, I know you're a fan, so I'd be curious for a Stars Best Of playlist.
Oh yeah, very much so. Get on that.
Give it a go. So
Take Me to the Riot, The Night Starts Here.
Yeah,
they're all great.
Well, Your Ex-Lover Is Dead is maybe my favourite like I said to you the other day, I'm really annoyed right now that I blanked on that when I was doing top 10.
Oh, listen, those lists, by the way, the more and more I think about it, it's just what?
Throw that out.
Start another podcast then, without you.
Sure.
Burn the master's tapes, Eve.
Okay.
Sign us out, Dave.
I will sign us out. Thanks, lads. And we're coming to Galway 4th of November as part of the National Student Radio Conference, open to the public, I believe. Tickets are a tenner. Check that out. And yeah, I guess that's the end of all our announcements for this week. Closing us out this week, new Irish music. We have played Alva Reddy in this position before. She has a new song called The Tube. It's very good. It sounds like this. My name is Dave Hanrady. This has been No Encore. There'll be No Encore. Here's the song. Bye-bye.
Tonight I'm not making sense. Drunk again, we cannot be friends. Cause when I see you with her, with anyone, I go crazy. I wake up thinking you're next to me. Let me walk you to the tube. There's nothing I can say to you.
I gave up on you guys, to be honest. Like.
Oh, for fuck's sake! What?
Andrew, this one should be fairly tight in a good way, I think.
Yeah, no, yeah, should be fine.
Like a
don't.
Like a 17-year-old bottle of whiskey, 17-year-old bottle of scotch.
All right,
can't wait for Eve to episode this. I can't wait for Eve to episode this. Can't wait for her to edit this. I had 1 point.
This is I'm absolutely starving. I haven't eaten since yesterday afternoon.
That's insane.
Sorry, I had a banana this morning. But yeah, that's it.
That's almost as bad as not eating at all.
Well, what? How does that work? It's a bit of potassium, man.
Oh, yeah.
Did I say MLK?
Yeah.
LMK.
Shit.
Do it again.
Yeah. I'm going all the way back there, Eve. Cheers.
All right. Sup, it's your boy, Galea.
Leave it. For fuck's sake.
Okay.
This podcast is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.